People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. If you've been to any of the recent concerts, you will know that we've had a dynamic young conductor here called Nicholas Chalmers, who's regarded as one of the leading conductors in the UK at the moment. His energy and vision have seen the establishment of highly successful artistic and education projects, and his work impacts thousands of young people each year. And Nicholas is driven by a passion to bring classical music to the next generation and to ensure that people in areas of underprovision have better access to training and engagement in the performing arts. So, Nicholas, welcome. Welcome indeed.
Thank you, Rodney. It's an absolute pleasure to be with you, and it's been a great gift to think about all the music I can share with you for this program.
I'm looking forward. I've seen the list, so it certainly is interesting, so thank you. But I've said that here you are. You've done two concerts with us so far, two very different concerts. Has it been, well, I know you're going to say yes, but has it been a joy? Have you enjoyed yourself?
I love Cape Town. I love South Africa. I'm half South African. Yes, a lot of my work is in the UK, but this is my, I guess, sixth visit in my life. And the last two visits have been with the Cape Town Philharmonic Orchestra. In 2025, we brought 120 members of the National Youth Choir here, and we did Walton's great Belshazzar's Feast in City Hall. We took them around the Cape, Stellenbosch, sang, and the orchestra immediately re-invited me to come back. And
well, that's a good sign.
Well, I hope so. And for two concerts, which I've thoroughly enjoyed over the last 2 weeks, as you say, very contrasting programs. But what's been very special for me is having one of the pieces as a central choral work, and Lobgesang by Mendelssohn, bringing together not only the great and fabulous Cape Town Philharmonic Orchestra, but also two contrasting choirs, Fox Chamber Choir and Afri Arts Chorus. These are great singers you have locally, and 80 of them sang there in City Hall on Thursday the 16th, and it was just a magnificent display of vocal talent. And I know you've got a great orchestra, but what always rings in my ears when I think about music in South Africa is the choral scene. It's the vitality of choral music, because across the world, everyone's got a voice. And I truly feel, even though we know there's a lot of poverty here in this region, I do always think that what everyone does have is that democratic feel of a voice. And that comes through in the choral music and your great history of choral language you have here. It's so varied in the global south, isn't it? But it's particularly in South Africa. There's so much interesting choral music which needs documenting, which we need to take back and sing in Europe.
Well, let me ask you this, just to go back a bit. How do you mean you're half South African?
Thank you for asking. My father was born in Germiston, Johannesburg, in 1932. My grandmother was baptized here in Cape Town in St. George's Cathedral. In fact, I had the great privilege this week of going to see her name in the baptism books from 1902. She arrived in 1981 and was baptized the year after. And it was my mum in London who's very good at researching all my family tree. My father sadly died in 2014, but throughout much of his career until 1977, he was a jazz musician here in South Africa, playing mainly Johannesburg and Durban, then crossing over to the Cape for many concerts. And I think I have a great affinity with the music scene here. And I always know, like I talk to lots of my friends, when I come to land in Cape Town, I always feel a bit of a homecoming. It makes me quite emotional landing in Cape Town.
Gosh, that's interesting. Were you born in England then? You weren't born here.
I was born in London in December 1977, on the 21st of December, just before Christmas. In fact, the hospital placed me in a little cradle under the tree saying I was baby Jesus. I think that's the most holy I've ever been in my life. But it was, my father and my mother, who is from London, came over to work here as a pharmacist in the 70s and met my father here. And when she was pregnant with me, they moved to the UK so I could grow up there.
Okay. And you've been there ever since, obviously.
On and off, yes. I did study there as a teenager, as a young boy, and then I went to Oxford University, and after leaving, I took what I thought in my life was a bit of a left turn. I went and studied conducting and harpsichord in Milan, Piacenza Conservatoire, Milan Conservatoire, learned Italian, had a slower pace of life for 2 years when I was about 22, 23 years old. And so Italy is very much part of my life, and I'm I have the great privilege of running Amiata Music in Tuscany, which opens this year, and it's something I've been working on the last 2 years. So Italy, UK, South Africa, all part of my musical tapestry.
Right. Listen, Nicholas, there's lots to talk about, but I want you just to go back to your life in the UK and talking about choirs. I mean, you're a choral conductor. Choral music is clearly your first love, although you obviously do the symphonic repertoire and opera as well. Are you able to describe what it is about choral music that grabs you and fascinates you?
I think I can define it as being in my muscle memory from a young age. I sang in the Middlesex Boys Choir from the age of 7 to 9. I then was a chorister in Tewkesbury Abbey. I learnt the organ as my voice changed. I was the organ scholar at Chichester Cathedral, St Paul's Cathedral, acting sub-organist of Westminster Abbey. I've done many, many different things in my life, which involves church music.
Right, so the organ was your instrument initially.
Organ, viola, violin, piano. Organ became my main instrument, and harpsichord, really, by the time I was a postgraduate. And I tell you what's always captured me is the architecture of music, is singing in big buildings, singing historic choral music and contemporary choral music in large spaces. I think you have to use your full muscular infrastructure of your body to get that sound across big buildings. And therefore, for me, choral music has always been part of me. It's in my bones, literally. Mm-hmm. And I think, therefore, I know the power it's had on me, and it makes me a very happy musician, choral music. And whether it's in the amateur or professional sphere, I think everyone's got a voice. And anyone who ever says to me, oh, I can't sing, I'm tone deaf, I only sing in the shower, I think it's just nonsense. Everyone's a secret singer.
Right.
And I love community singing as well as highest level professional singing, which I get to experience conducting the BBC Singers and the National Youth Choir of Great Britain.
Oh, there's that as well, the BBC Singers. It's a major part of your life there, isn't it, really?
I'm their associate conductor and form a lot of their education programs. I also conducted them at the first night of the Proms in 2020 when we were all in COVID, and I had all the singers in the orchestral stalls where the audience would normally sit, and we were live on television with no audience. But it was one of the most special moments of my life, performing Eric Whitaker's Sleep, and all my friends texted me going, oh, you're busy.
But what a piece that is.
It's an epic piece.
That must have been quite an experience in
that hall. And also Eric Whitaker, his choral language is so powerful now in America and in Europe, and so many young people I work with love singing his music, and you see people like Eric and others who really inspire the next generation to sing.
Have you met Eric Whitaker?
I've met him several times. I've worked with him.
Okay.
I really, really enjoy his music making, his passion for choral singing. But yes, I'm very lucky to enjoy a rich tapestry in my life as a musician of choral music, orchestral music and opera. But fundamentally, Rodney, I love putting on a show.
I see. And you're a showman.
I love putting on
you're
a show.
You're an entertainer.
Well, yes, I think so. I like the joy you can get from music making. I always, whoever I'm with, there's always joy to be found in music. Pathos, joy. And I think in the modern age, there's a moment to get lost within your subconscious, which we really need to value now. We're so distracted. We work in sort of 5 to 10 minute segments in our life. But sometimes it's just possible to do one thing and do that one thing for 3 hours. And that's a great gift.
Nicholas, what is your first piece of music? Now, I said I'd had a peek at your list and I see Rameau lurking there.
I love Rameau. I play a lot of Rameau's harpsichord music. I chose this piece because it really reminds me of a period 4 years ago when my partner and I, he's an opera singer, Lawrence Kilsby, a tenor. He lives in Paris. We also live in London, but we have a flat in the 11th arrondissement in Paris. Lawrence started singing with a group called Pygmalion and with the great conductor Raphael Pichon. And they performed Rameau's work, Les Bourriades. And this movement that begins the fourth act of a 5-act opera. And it's Rameau's last opera. But for me, it just reminds me of our life together when we are together in Paris or London. It just, as a couple, signifies who we are for some reason.
That's music by Rameau, Jean-Philippe Rameau, from Les Boreades. And it was the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, the conductor Nicholas Chalmers, who's been in town conducting two concerts with the Cape Town Philharmonic, including that wonderful choral piece by Mendelssohn. And I'm interested that you chose that, Nicholas, because it's not performed very often. I can't remember it being performed here in Cape Town.
Well, the same can be said of Walton Belteser's Feast last year. Lobgesang is an absolutely incredible piece, celebrates the 400th anniversary of the printing press, and Mendelssohn has such a gift for celebration and praise. And he is the great composer who not just rediscovered Bach, but put Bach back on the map.
Like this in Matthew Passion.
Exactly, exactly. And Mendelssohn also writing for concert halls in the United Kingdom in Birmingham. I see him as the end of the Baroque period. Many yes. people see Mendelssohn as romantic. I think there's a lot of romantic melody, as we'd say, romantic in sort of in quotes. But actually, really, his inspiration is from the Baroque period of music. And actually, the way we played this on Thursday, I hope, really had a spirit of the past with Bach, rather than thinking too much sentimentality into the future.
And Victorian style Mendelssohn, not yeah. that sort of style.
I think there's a place for that, but I think you need to be quite subtle. I was saying to the orchestra, it's like the equivalent of Donizetti in opera. Light, fluffy, ice creamy music, rather than heavy industrial revolution metalwork. No, it needs to have that kind of horizontal feel in the texture. If you have a thick F major chord, if you've got a semibrieve, if you're a brass player, a long note, come away from the note. You know, don't just don't fill in the gaps because there's music on the page. Think about phrasing away, think about texture, think about filleting the piece so it becomes very horizontal, like we're lying on a bed of calm sound. Mendelssohn is so delicate. If you think of the octet of the Violin Concerto, the strings should shimmer, the brass should be warm, the wind should have careful articulation, and when the timpani comes in, it just adds a subtle bit of texture.
There's that lovely quote from Mendelssohn who said, "One mustn't use the trombone too much, it's too sacred." And yet he opens the Song of Praise, doesn't he, with a great trombone solo almost.
Absolutely, as Mozart was very careful to use the trombones in not only in Don Giovanni, but also in the Requiem. They're very carefully deployed. And of course, Mendelssohn, their great nod to Mozart, beginning, you know, it is a sacred piece, a hymn of praise. That is Lobgesang.
It's the hymn of praise. The other thing that I noticed about it, and I might be horribly wrong, but part of the choral writing, every now and again, reminded me of Handel.
Absolutely. It's the dots, da di da 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 di
oh, right,
da.
Right.
And also the way the first choral entry begins, da 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 da, from the orchestra, it's like Zadok the Priest.
Oh, so it is.
And it's 16 bars introduction, and it gathers in a crescendo, and then suddenly the chorus cut through. And you hear the history of music there in Mendelssohn. Yeah. It's a summation, really, of where we got to through Mozart, through Handel, through Bach.
The other thing I just wanted to mention before we move on, talking about the recent concerts, the Bartok Viola Concerto is also something we don't hear too often. And our soloist, Petrus Kutsier, I gather you and he worked quite hard on it over the last few weeks on Zoom, or whatever you do these days.
Petrus is a fantastic leader here of the viola section, the orchestra. And how wonderful to be here to have two South African soloists, Roelof Temminck, the piano concerto we did on the 9th of April, his son playing that concerto, very, very important moment for Cape Town audiences. And then our very own Petrus Kutsier playing the viola in the Bartok Viola Concerto. Yeah, what a wonderful thing to be able to work well in advance on this piece, to have time with the orchestra, and to see the support his colleagues give to the music. They roll their sleeves up and want to do a really good job, not just for Roelof, but for Petrus. And it's just lovely to watch the subtlety they want to approach with the dynamics. And the Bartok is a tricky, angular, rhythmic piece with some sentimentality. It's got a very sort of folksy last movement. When I say folksy, it just feels very sort of folk song driven and got wonderful oboe melodies and sort of a peasant style underlying string energy, ba 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 ba, and
well, he loved collecting folk music, didn't he, Bartok?
And you can hear it all the way through this piece.
Well, just talking about it like this, let me tell you that we'll hear it on the air because those concerts are delayed broadcasts. So we'll hear the Viola Concerto and we'll hear the Lobgesang in the next few weeks. So that's something to listen out for. And in choosing the works, because both programs were a little unusual. And I know you chose them with the outgoing or the ex-CEO, Louis Heinemann. Was there any kind of reason you chose, for example, the Bartok or the Song of Praise, the Lobgesang?
Well, absolutely. And these decisions are driven by commercial realities. I mean, Elijah by Mendelssohn had been done recently.
That's right, it had been.
Beethoven 9 gets done a lot. And we wanted to do a choral work. And the Verdi Requiem would be done recently. We went through the list. But what was always on my mind when we were going to do the Walton Belters Feast with the National Youth Choir is the alternative was going to be Lobgesang. Because I feel it's a great piece for young people to sing as well. Experience Mendelssohn's work. It's a healthy sing. So basically it was like, what else is left which is magical, which hasn't been done recently? And it's a great, great piece. So we just had that conversation and landed on Lobgesang. The Bartok, well, we were going through a series now where we were celebrating musicians from within the orchestra and local talent. So that's why we landed on those concertos, which mm-hmm. have been programmed for this season. And then it was a case of what do we open the concerts with? And I chose the Beethoven Egmont and then the Britten. Young person's
that was
guide
such
orchestra.
A treat, I must say. In your first concert, I think you got into everybody's good books because it's such a marvelous work.
It is an incredible work. Britten, if you adhere to what Britten writes on the page and you lift that music off the page, it's got such great spirit. And when the fugue comes together at the end between the strings and the percussion and the women, everyone chugging away really, really at velocity, it's just exciting.
I like the way you say chugging away. Nicholas, I think it's time for another piece of music. I see we go to the world of opera, Mozart, The Marriage of Figaro, and you've chosen the Act Two finale.
I have, and I'll tell you why.
Yes.
Mozart is incredible. We all know that. But when I had the great fortune of establishing an opera company in the UK, which is Neville Holt Opera, which I established with the businessman David Ross in the Midlands in the United Kingdom in 2012, we performed a series of operas over a few years. And then he came to me and said, look, we've got this beautiful 17th century stable yard theatre where we've been performing. Why don't we convert it into a new opera house?
Did you say a stable?
17th century stable yard. And we covered it with tarpaulin and scaffolding in the internal courtyard. And that became our theatre. And we had an orchestral pit dug out. But after a number of years, it was fine. But when the wind blew, the scaffolding shook and the wind lifted the tarpaulin. It was pretty good for Britten Turn of the Screw in
yes,
the last scene.
Or Peter Grimes,
yes. But this was a decision that we had built from 2016 to 2018, an opera house within that same footprint in that building, properly built. And it won the Reba People's Award, the Royal Institute of British Architects Award. And we opened the theatre with Le Nozze di Figaro, The Marriage of Figaro. And what better piece to open it with? But for me, opera's been so much part of my life. And as we talked about earlier, putting on a show, bringing designers and singers together into a field in the middle of nowhere and putting on opera to the highest level was a defining moment for me. It's what the Christie's were doing with Glyndebourne back in the day. They defined Glyndebourne by putting on Mozart and doing it well. So I set myself the challenge of doing the Da Ponte operas over a three-year period beginning in 2018 with Le Nozze di Figaro. And for me, the end of Act Two, the finale, the chaos which ensues on stage, who knows what's going on, but then there's this clarity where the strings come through, dum, da-da-dum, ba-da-dum, ba-da-dum, and all the players and all the musicians on stage suddenly come together. And then there's this wonderful moment when the first violins clock this top E flat. And from then on in, the music's just cooking. And I remember looking down at the great orchestra playing in the pit. It was the Royal Northern Symphonia coming down from Newcastle to play for us. And I looked into the first violins, and the joy on their faces as we got to that finale on that first night, I'll never forget it. In fact, I remember seeing some of them crying because for them, Mozart was just the best. And it reminded me of what we'd achieved. And so it's really a moment where I thought, we did this. Contro voi prendendo me contro non ne va me che pedolare.
peggio. Io son qui per giudicare.
Io da lei scelto avvocato vengo a farli sui di invece le legittime pretese io qui vengo a palesare.
Silenzio, silenzio, silenzio. Io son qui per giudicare.
Io come uomo al mondo condito vengo qui per testimonio del promesso matrimonio con prestanza di danaro.
Sono i morti, sono i morti, sono i morti.
Silenzio, lo vedremo. Il contratto leggeremo. Tutto in ordine devi andare.
Sempre il suo sostenito.
Finale of Act 2 of Mozart's opera The Marriage of Figaro, that recording with Claudio Abbado conducting the Vienna Philharmonic and soloists, and the second choice of my guest Nicholas Chalmers, who was in Cape Town conducting two concerts with the Cape Town Philharmonic. And you let it sneak out earlier, Nicholas, that Claudio Abbado is a particular favorite as a conductor.
I love his musicianship. And I've got a little bit obsessed about watching him on YouTube, actually. I think there's just this Italian elegance, not only the way he dresses, but the way he uses the baton, his zest for finding the music. And I think he always finds another level in performance. I've watched rehearsal videos of him where he's quite sort of uncertain about what he wants. And they said this, the Berlin Film Musicians, that, you know, actually the rehearsals were sometimes a bit painful. but where he came alive really was in performance, like so many conductors. But watching him also with the Venezuela kids orchestras and everything, he was just such a great advocate for the highest standards, but with the greatest humanity.
Mm-hmm. And then he got so ill, didn't he? And I wonder if you saw that film of him conducting the Verdi Requiem on the anniversary of Verdi's death in Berlin with the Berlin Philharmonic and Abbado and Gyorgyu. And at the end, with the camera focused on him, there was no applause. There was absolute silence. And he looked sad and broken and sort of exhausted all at the same time. It was a magical moment if you ever get a chance to see it.
I have watched that, and I've watched also his final Mahler 9 in Lucerne. This is a man who knew that he was nearing the end of his life, and he still managed to throw everything into his music making until it drained every last drop from his body. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're going to go, you're going to want to, you know, you just felt that. I mean, that's, he gave everything to that life. I think about all the time he had in the studio in concert performances, how much devotion he'd had to get to that standard and how much angst and politics he would have had to have dealt with. But for him, it was always prima la musica. The music always comes first. And I just have an enormous respect for that individual.
I remember the BBC Music Magazine ran a thing about conductors some years ago where they asked conductors to say who their favorite conductors were. And number one was Carlos Kleiber, but number two was Abado, Claudio Abado. That's very high ranking from conductors who voted them in.
People always obsess about Carlos Kleiber. I can see why, because he was just very energetic and brilliant, but he didn't have a very broad repertoire.
Very small, in fact.
Yeah, and he didn't, you know, he was very selective about what he wanted to do. Quite a bit of a diva, I think, as well. I mean, I think a great character. But I think, you know, Claudio was really treading the boards. He was doing everything all the time. His opera, symphonic work, his devotion to youth music making, his devotion to new music. There is someone who was living it day in, day out, not choosing what he wants to do all the time.
Which Kleiber famously did. And talking about conductors, Nicholas, a rather strange thing happened at your first concert here 2 weeks ago now, where you broke your baton in the middle of the Tchaikovsky. How does a conductor break his baton in the middle of a live performance?
Well, I have to say, it's probably quite a frequent occurrence. Not for me, though. It was a one-off. I was beginning the waltz in the 5-4 tempo with the cellos. And I always say to my students at the Royal Academy of Music, where I'm professor of choral conducting, you know, if you've got the low sonority of the orchestra or choir, maybe you just gesture a bit lower. And I did this quite low gesture to the cellos to encourage them. And as I came to bring in the rest of the orchestra, I lifted my baton and I snapped it in half. But I carried on with a very small baton. But I did travel here with four batons in my case. I'm down to three, but two in my case are for Monde, who runs the Fonseca High School Choir in Gugoletto. And last year with the National Youth Choir, we partnered the Fonseca High School Choir and the National Youth Choir of Great Britain. They sang here at City Hall, Lovely Day, Bill Withers, as well as Parry, I Was Glad. And it was just amazing to partner those two schools. And we have this great history with them now where the National Youth Choir bought the Fonseca kids a new piano for their performances. And I'm teaching some of their students choral conducting. And I saw them last Friday in Gugoletto. And they were on such spectacular form, this choir, learning the Schubert Mass in G. Oh, so very, very ambitious. So I bought more batons with me.
Do you not have a spare baton on your music stand on the concert platform?
Well, I think I might have to now, Rodney. I think I now need to have a safety baton.
The only thing I've ever seen apart from that is a baton flying out of the conductor's hand.
That certainly happened to me before, but I'll tell you what actually happened to me is with the Bromley Youth Orchestra from Kent, when I was first conducting the Haydn Nelson Mass, I did a very big gesture in this sort of military section in the Benedictus, and my cummerbund flew off. And it flew into the second violinist's faces, which was terribly embarrassing for a youth orchestra, but they kept their composure. We all kept our dignity, and the only people who saw it were the orchestra and chorus.
It would have blinded them, of course, if it flew into their faces while they were trying to read the music, goodness sake. The choir you've just been talking about, just say their name again.
The Fonseca.
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 High School Choir.
And that's based in Gugoletto.
Yes.
A lot of people who visit this country, and you sort of hinted at this earlier, the sound of the black choirs here is quite different, isn't it, from a sort of European sound? And so then, for example, blending that with the Vox choir for the Song of Praise, the Lobgesang, were there any problems stylistically, or is it easy to adapt?
Well, we had a wonderful rehearsal period pairing Vox Chamber Choir and Afri Arts Choir. We did some social cohesion to begin with. We had a big lunch and we did some warm-ups. We sang the unaccompanied chorale. And little by little, we kind of shared a bit of each other's sounds.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to at any stage saying, I don't want it to sound like that. Or there was nothing to say suppressing their art. Uh-huh. I'm never interested in that.
Yeah.
Make good people sing well. That's all I'm interested in. People have to do it from the heart, from the gut. We can obviously blend the sound. We can use the text to infuse the energy in the piece. And therefore, we face no problems.
Yeah. You really are obsessed with choral singing, aren't you? With choral work.
Well, I believe that there's so much wonderful poetry and language out there, which has been set so superbly, that we just have a necessity to give it the great care and attention it needs. And I love drama, and drama is text, and text is humanity, and humanity is singing, and we all have a voice. And
yes,
you
said
me.
It a few times, that we all have a voice. Some people would argue with you, but I think you're right. Everyone has a voice, and if you just do it properly, you can sing, from singing in church choirs, which happens a lot in this country, by the way. A lot of people come up through the ranks, like our opera company here, for example. A lot of people came up through the ranks of singing in choirs in church.
Absolutely. And I used to run the large singing choruses with general public at the Royal Opera House in London. And you'd have 200, 300 people turning up on a Friday afternoon to singing bits of Nessun Dorma arranged by me. And people who would turn up not knowing how to read a note of music, but the person next to them might have known a bit. And we'd raise the roof in that room because of the drama of the music. And people would just release their inhibitions. Music also is such a curer of disease and a necessity for health and breathing. So that's why I'm slightly obsessed by it. Medicine and music and maths and all the M's.
Oh, yes, because music is so mathematical, isn't it, really,
yes.
In so many ways, especially Bach, apart from anything else. And talking about blowing the roof off, what better than Belshazzar's Feast for a choir to really let rip?
Absolutely. The National Youth Choir last year singing this in City Hall. It's such a great piece for young voices because of the rhythmic energy. The orchestra loved playing it. And when the orchestra first heard that choir in City Hall, you just saw them going, oh, right, we've got where we're on here. And also the choir doesn't often sing with orchestra. So when they knew the Cape Town Philharmonic were playing it with such style and rhythmic energy, it was just a great partnership. It went off like a firework.
Now we're going to take another piece of music, and we're back in the world of opera here with Tosca, that fantastic finale to Act One known as the Te Deum.
I love the Te Deum. Oh, Puccini for me is the most incredible dramatist. This is a guy who kept on being told that there was too much text in the pieces. He then was so sensitive about how to fill it, his drama. So his great operas are an hour and 45 minutes, 2 hours long. They're not four hour statements. They are not 4 hours of music. They are very well thought through. And his devotion to detail at the end of Act One, you know, when he first conceived Tosca, it was for Rome. And he even had little details, like the bells were being played were reminiscent of the bells of St. Peter's, that the costuming should be the Swiss Guards. So there was I just love that attention to detail. And Tosca is the piece I launched Northern Ireland Opera with in Londonderry in Northern Ireland in 2011 with my great friend and collaborator, Oliver Mears, who's currently the director of opera at the Royal Opera House. We put this opera on like they did with Domingo in the 80s, where they put it across the city over the times given in the score. And we did a similar act in Derry, where we started in the cathedral, took the second act to the Guildhall, and then the third act to a Catholic dance hall, which had a proscenium arch. And for me, again, it just reminds me of a great collaboration when I was in my early 30s.
Tre sbirri, una carrozza, presto, seguila dovunque vada, non visto, provvedi.
Va bene, il convegno.
Palazzo Farnese. Va. Sannita Scarpia. Fa Tosca. E Scarpia fece il falco della tua gelosia.
Magnificent closing of Act One of Tosca by Puccini, known as the Te Deum there. And it was another choice of my guest, Nicholas Chalmers, the conductor, who, as we've been hearing, is mad about choral music. And I'm glad that that extends, Nicholas, into opera as well, because sometimes, I mean, I would never have associated Stephen Clewbery or David Wilcox with opera. They were purely choral. But as you've said, you do enjoy opera very much as well.
I absolutely do. I had of a church music background, but occasionally, I think for me, life has been a series of musical chapters. I was never so obsessed that I wanted a career in church music. I love the buildings, I love the people, love the music. But then in my mid-20s, I got a bug for opera. And the more I could put it on and stage things, and with my friend Oliver Mears, we staged all these one-act operas. The Medium by Menotti, oh, Mozart, yes. The Impresario, Bernstein, Trouble in Tahiti, all these great, Barbara, Hand of Bridge. And I found this incredible love for opera. And then I got appointed to be assistant chorus director of English National Opera. And over a period of 4 years, I did 34 operas. Whoa. And I got so embedded with that sound. And also at the same time, I was still working alongside the BBC singers. And I think I just was so interested in that adaptability of the choral sound. So I was happy in all of those spheres. Yeah. I wasn't obsessed by one of them.
But what about the symphonic repertoire, the purely orchestral repertoire, accompanying a soloist and so on? Do you have as much of a passion for that?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, I think I like getting up and going to work. So I do a lot of symphonic work. I do a lot of opera, and I'm very, very lucky to do big choral works as well at the highest level. And so everything's really, really important to me, the rich tapestry of it all. And just working with the orchestra here for the last 2 weeks, when we can go into such depth without the singers in the rehearsal room, tuning the woodwind, making sure the ensemble's really, really, really effective, making sure all the different composers and all the different styles really have their own musical language. That attracts me, as well as the choral music as well. I am obsessed by it because maybe it's my comfortable place, but we all know we get better as musicians if occasionally we're in an uncomfortable zone. And maybe for me, symphonic work and having the devotion to sort of the technicalities of instruments is where I have to do more work as a musician. But that's where I feel I'd learn a lot.
Because that Tchaikovsky symphony you did, number 6, is possibly his most difficult technically because of a whole host of reasons in that work and its length and its curious closing. So that must have been a great challenge, and it was such a wonderful performance.
I truly love that piece. I think ever since I saw Valery Gergiev conduct it with Mariinsky Theatre Orchestra on the stage of English National Opera in memory of the children who were killed at Beslan, the tragedy in Russia.
Right.
And I remember that performance. He conducted from memory, hearing that orchestra on the stage, which I was used to performing on. And the Prince Charles was there, our king. And I just remember everyone was so moved by it. And for me, actually, I think I was in my mid-20s. I think I'd only ever heard it once before. And for me, it just embedded in my soul that night, the tragedy of what had happened. And everyone tries to read in their own inner story. Tchaikovsky talks about the secret program about it. But for me, if you just approach that symphony as a man going through life, failing, succeeding, but succumbing to the pressures which are on him, you can eke out anything from anyone else in the room who's also a human being.
It is an extraordinary piece, gosh, and that very strange, mysterious, dark ending as well.
Yes.
Started off by that gong. Anyway, let's go to another piece of music. And you've chosen O Thou Who Camest From Above. Now tell me about this.
Well, this is one of my favorite hymns. The words by Charles Wesley and then Samuel Sebastian Wesley writing the music. Charles Wesley writing the text in 1762, just the year before the first track we heard today by Rameau.
Oh, nice.
I just think the words are beautiful. Pentecost is the theme of the text in the church calendar. And the recording I've chosen is Trinity College Cambridge Choir in the late 90s with Richard Marlowe, their director of music. Many of my friends singing and one of my closest friends playing the organ. And Richard Marlowe, the academic and choir director, wrote this double descant for the sopranos. And for me, it's my favorite hymn sung by my favorite people with one of the most beautiful descants ever written.
A beautiful hymn. It's called O Thou Who Camest From Above, and it was another choice of Nicholas Chalmers, my guest. Moving away from orchestras, Nicholas, in the short time we have left, and choirs, I believe that you are quite an enthusiastic glider and hiker, all of which I suppose works well in South Africa.
I couldn't agree more. What a wonderful country you have for both of those pursuits. some of the orchestra have guided me up Lion's Head, which, even though I've been here several times, I've never actually been up Lion's Head. And it was a perfect evening and the sunset was incredible. It's a tough walk.
Mm-hmm. I've done it, and not many people believe that, but I have.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Indian Fenster, that route up Cape Town up to Table Mountain is incredible. And I've done several hikes in the wilderness and flown in a glider over the mountains in the Drakensberg. Wow. This country is amazing. I think probably the highlight of my hiking life is with my mum in Patagonia. In 2019, we walked Patagonia and Torres de Pinus, all that wonderful South American, Chilean, Argentinian scenery, and a few glasses of lovely red wine on the way, too.
Yes, I'm sure. Well, you can also get that here. A few glasses of lovely red wine.
In abundance.
Down here. Because I presume that call creates a relaxing atmosphere for you because of the intensity of your work. That to go gliding, hiking, sipping wine must be a wonderful relaxation.
I'm very lucky. I've got very, very good and close friends. I'm a sociable person. A lot of conducting is studying on your own, on your lonesome, and then suddenly being in front of lots of people. But I'm very lucky in London to live very near my mum, my brother. I have a wonderful relationship where I have a partner who's in my same industry as me, and we share a lot of our musical thoughts. But we
and
share
that's
it
in Paris.
Paris and in London.
And in London.
Okay. So Lawrence sings all over Europe, is having a really fantastic operatic career and song recital career. But we all need our distractions from music, and mine is eating well, hiking, walking it off, and then sometimes flying myself to the moon.
There you are. Now, I know why you've done that, of course, because we're away from the classical world now, I see, with Fly Me to the Moon. We associate this so much with Frank Sinatra, don't we? But now you've chosen Julie London.
I love this recording. My father, who was, as I said near the beginning of the program, a jazz musician, a jazz drummer in South Africa, died in 2014, and I realized, having spoken to my mum, that he occasionally played for Julie London. And at my father's funeral, the last piece of music we played was Fly Me to the Moon. And I just think this is an energetic performance. And my father lived a very good and happy and fulfilled life through music. And I always see happiness in this piece, even though it was quite a solemn occasion.
Absolutely. Nicholas Chalmers, it's been a great joy to speak to you as we play you out with this, Fly Me to the Moon. And I'm sure you'll be back. So let's keep in touch and come back and entertain us once again.
Thank you so much, Rodney. It's been such a pleasure to share this music with you.
Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, darling, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you. song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.